whatever Jesus needs him to do, he says yes to, which is so uncategorically different than what I typically live my life like. Whatever Jay wants to do, I usually do. And where Paul has a mindset of whatever Jesus wants to do, he does. Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. I usually reside on the Erie campus, but I'm glad you are listening today. Do me a huge favor. Visit calvarybible.com, click your campus, and find out what is happening in your neck of the woods. Get connected and stay connected by visiting calvarybible.com. We have so many great things happening this fall, including the launch of our fall Market Up series, The Book of Philippians. It's a joy to sit down with Mark Wicks today as we kick off the weekly for the fall and connect the dots in the book of Philippians as we study it together. Mark, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
The Canadian and the Texan sit down for a conversation.
Yeah, just, you know, polar opposite worlds that we've come from.
That is so true, my friend. The Jew and Gentile world. Yeah. I don't know which one's Jew and which one's Gentile, but they're probably... It's all right.
I'm not even going to try to define that. I think that's just going to get us in trouble.
Yeah, that probably will get us in trouble. But it's good to sit down with you and talk about the launch of the fall series, Book of Philippians. And just for our normal, everyday listeners of the weekly, we are trying to make this weekly this fall in the book of Philippians to help sort of connect those dots of what we're hearing on Sunday, what we're studying in each of our locations, and then also the devotional along with just the added commentary of what we think is helpful when you come to a book like Philippians.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think if you've been following along with this podcast for a long time, you're probably used to like more of the preachers sitting on here and talking about their sermons and things like that. I think, you know, a symptom of the fact that Calvary just continues to grow means that those guys are busy. You know, they're doing a lot to serve people, to minister to them. So we will have a lot of those guys on throughout the fall, but, you know, just there'll be some weeks like this too.
Yeah. And what a joy it is even this summer that Eden stepped in to host the summer version of the weekly a few times, and she'll be in the seat directing the conversation along with us.
Yeah.
How fun is that?
Fun.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to her two episodes of the weekly, highly recommend that. Although I might be biased because she did have Jack on and he had sort of a overlay of all the episodes we've ever shot in the weekly.
Yeah. It was, if you haven't watched that, Jack Davis, who's a part of our church, was on, and he, over the last few years, has listened to every episode of the weekly. So it's just a fun kind of perspective of someone who has done a deep dive onto that and what they've kind of experienced hearing those episodes.
That's right. Right. Now, where are we sitting today as we film the podcast? We're in a new space that Calvary has made its own space this last summer. Where are we at?
So we're here in what we're calling Calvary Downtown Erie. And we just, again, I've already mentioned Calvary's growing. And one of the things we lack is just some meeting space, spaces for Bible studies, space for our staff to meet, space for one-on-one conversations. And so we found a space in downtown Erie. We're sitting on top of the Old Mine restaurant, if you're familiar with that. And just a really, it's kind of a, got a cool vibe with the brick walls. So we thought we'd bring that to the video version of the podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, how are you enjoying having this space?
You know, it's fantastic. Last night I had premarital counseling in one of these rooms, and it's just like a nice warm environment. It beats sort of sitting in Calvary Kids with like a plastic table and but it's just, it's a really great space and it's been used
if
well.
There are any interruptions, we apologize, but there's still a little bit of work in progress and there's no door on this room yet. So you never know who might pop in.
Who might make a guest appearance on the podcast. Yeah. But it's a really great space. And like I said, I think it's important to highlight that like Calvary and Erie, along with the other campuses, were having a space issue. And so we needed some more meeting space.
Yeah.
Spaces for like things like this.
Yeah. One thing when we talk about that I don't want to lose sight of is like, I think sometimes it's easy to talk about that logistically.
Yes.
You know, and we've said this from the congregation, you know, so people probably heard this, you know, that we're looking into those space issues and what all of our campuses need in all three locations. But I think one thing that just really struck me once when an early conversation Thomas had with the staff was just the heart mm-hmm. behind it. That's, I think, harder to capture sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, him just talking about just what he sees as he works with people in the community. He works with the police department. He does some stuff up at the high school, and just the need that people have for hope and a future and our desire for them to find that in Jesus. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not just a, like, we're getting bigger and better
yeah, know, kind that's of right.
thing. It's, we see need and we want people to encounter Jesus.
Yep. That's well said, Mark. Well said. Well, how about we hop into the discussion of the book of Philippians? Although, actually, I want to pause and declare on the podcast that you're looking at the campus that holds the Calvary Cup officially.
Oh, yes. Very important. Yeah.
It's a very important distinction. It needs to be on the podcast. It should be behind us today. We should have had
it with us today. Well, it'll make an appearance. Yeah. We'll make sure. But yeah, so the Calvary campus won the golf tournament this summer.
Yeah, the Erie campus did, and it was fantastic. And we hope to rub it in Tom's face for the next year. What if we never had the tournament ever again? We would be the perpetual winners. That'd be pretty epic.
That would be.
That would be. All right.
Although, if it gets neglected, Tom's going to steal it. That's what happened last.
That's right. He found it in a cabinet with dust on it, and he picked it up.
So we've got to take good care of that thing.
We do got to take good care of it. Put it on the podcast. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Cool.
I thought a good place to start with our conversation, Philippians, Jay, is you over the summer, you've been writing a devotional for us, and it kicks off this coming week. So we'll have these at the Erie campus. We'll have a whole bunch of these.
Yeah. And there's a digital version as well.
Yeah, you can get it on our website, calvarybible.com/PhilDevo, which sounds like somebody's name.
Yeah.
Phil Devo. I'm curious if you could just tell us more about like the theme for that and why you chose that kind of structure for it.
That's a really good question. Okay, so the theme of this Devo this time around was, after our work with the Advent Devo last year, I thought, man, what an opportunity to maybe do something far grander in the scheme of helping connect the dots between another series that Calvary did. And then when elders and Thomas and the lead team came to us and said, we're going to do the book of Philippians, I thought that might be the opportunity. And it really comes down to, I picked, actually, our good friend Kendra Groves picked the Greek words out of the book of Philippians. And you would think, why pick Greek words to have a Devo around? It comes from, long ago, one of my favorite authors is Frederick Buechner. And he was a pastor turned writer. So he was in the ministry, and then he felt God call him to writing, and he stepped out of the ministry. But he has a book that I read long ago called The Alphabet of Grace. And it's sort of a musing of sort of how God works through everyday ordinary situations. And that sort of lingered in the back of my head of like, I wonder if there's like a alphabet of words in the book of Philippians that could actually speak to us and draw us into a deeper understanding of not only who Paul is, not only what he's trying to communicate, but more importantly, what is God doing through the book of Philippians in our everyday life. And sort of the idea of getting the Greek words, having Kendra pick them, who I would say, you would probably say she's a New Testament scholar.
Yeah.
in our midst. And so that's sort of how that came about. And connecting sort of these words of Philippians that some are unique, some are used throughout the New Testament, and sort of playing off those studies and reflections of that, the Greek usage of those words, how it came about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really cool. Just it's, you know, sometimes it's just a neat way to move through the book, through the book of Philippians and highlight, you know, there's different ways you could write a devotional, but cause I've been spending a lot of sitting around it for a while cause I've been putting it together into the actual printable form. You know, and I think sometimes you read a word in the Bible and sometimes the definition's obvious. I can't remember from the thing, like joy just means joy, you know, kind of a thing. But then you also hit these words that, the English word that has been chosen by the translators doesn't always do the concept justice. And so I think that's really refreshing too. It just enriches our understanding of what Paul was saying and what the scriptures are saying.
Yeah. When I started prayerfully studying and writing for him in May, so I've been thinking about Philippians a lot. I felt the weight of which I'm talking to my own community in this. So, you know, sometimes projects are larger than scope of your own community, but I'm writing really this book knowing that you will read it. And so, and these devotionals, knowing that I'm talking directly to the context in which you and I reside and live our faith out. And in the midst of that, hanging out with Paul and his words for so long, I realized that's what he was doing in the book of Philippians. He's writing to people. He's not writing to situations. He's not writing to have a heavy hand of authority on someone. He's writing to his friends, and he's writing to people he hopes the best for. Just like I was writing for us at the at Calvary. It's like I'm writing so that you and I can be strengthened enough to continue to stay faithful today. And that's what Paul's trying to do. He's trying to flesh out what it means to have a faith while you live in Philippi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. And that, I think that's a good transition to thinking about like where is Philippi? How did Paul meet these people? You know, and like we spent a lot of time in Acts 16 on Sunday. So I think that's a good, you know, how did he become friends with these people in such a rich way?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think all three of the preachers this week at Calvary did a wonderful job sort of giving us a brief intro of where we're at, how these people and why these people mattered to Paul. You know, it starts actually in Acts 16:5 is the end of the first missionary journey. So you and I don't read Acts in the way in which it gives us headlines of like the end of the first missionary journey, the beginning of the second missionary journey, the third. You know, it doesn't give us that. We know that from study, commentaries, historical data points. These are when those ministries began.
Yeah.
And really what you've got to understand is like, I don't know what about you, but Paul is like this supercharged superhero of the faith, right?
Yeah, for sure.
If you were going to be honest, let's be honest. If you were going to sit down with him over a cup of coffee, it would be pretty intimidating, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Sometimes we have painted Paul so much that he becomes idyllic in some ways, the ideal Christian, and it's hard to make him relatable, right?
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we bring to the text that I think we have to be aware of is like we're reading Paul, who is a really fantastic, incredible human being who's encountered Jesus Christ. However, he is still a human being. He had tensions within his own life, and he had ways in which he moved in the world that were hard. And a lot of those things we pick up subtly in the text, and sometimes we don't. And so when we talk about Philippi and the people of the book of Philippians that's written to, there's a big story attached to it. And the story is this. First missionary journey winds down. So Paul and Barnabas, along with John Mark, who bailed out on him, basically on the first seaport, actually maybe the third seaport they arrive in.
Something like that.
Paul and Barnabas end up in the middle of nowhere in present day Turkey. And they end up there seeing how far the gospel could go to an unfamiliar place. And then they come back and they report it to the brothers, they say, brothers and sisters of Jerusalem. And that probably would have taken weeks, maybe months. I'm guessing Paul and Barnabas probably were like, I'm tired. I need to rest a little bit. They're probably weary from journeys. First century travel is not as easy as it is today. It doesn't take you days. It probably takes you weeks to recover from it. And so they're ready to go. Paul is ready to go on his second missionary journey. In the midst of that, it's a season in which the Mediterranean is probably hard to cross. So at the beginning of the second missionary journey, he takes an unfamiliar route that he doesn't in the other missionary journeys. He actually walks all the way to Turkey. So if you're looking at Jerusalem, the easiest way to get to sort of that land is by sea, although the trade winds and the route is very difficult to cross at certain times of the year. And so it's early spring. The ports might not even be open. There might be any ships that are even unwilling to make that journey yet. And so he hoofs it going north, which is actually the perfect time to cross that open country because it's cooler. It's not as hot as the summertime. And also gives him the opportunity to maybe visit places he hasn't visited in a few years, like Antioch, places like his own hometown, Tarsus. Mm-hmm. So highly likely that Paul has a community of Christians already in Tarsus. That's his hometown.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe he's visiting his mom. Maybe he told his mom in 4 years, within the 4-year window, I need to come back. And she's like, yeah, you better come back. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is that forces him that way. But he ends up hoofing across northern Israel through what we would call the eastern edge of Turkey, and trying to go into a region which Calvary people just have been in over in March.
Yeah.
A place called Galatia, which is a region. It's not just a town. It's sort of a region of a Roman area. Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to every episode of The Weekly like Jack Davis has, check out one from March where Thomas talked to Jay while Jay was still in Turkey.
Yeah.
You can actually hear that fresh conversation.
Yeah. And then they get there and Paul thinks he's going to continue the work in which he's done in the first missionary journey. He's excited to go back to some of these churches and people and converts and friends like you and I would be, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe to eat at his favorite restaurants in certain towns because he has a love for these people and these places. And then he has this thing in which the Holy Spirit does not allow him to continue. So it actually in verse 7 says the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. So they're like, okay, this is strange.
Yeah.
There's a lot of closed doors. And then they get to Troas, which we drove by Troas in March. And which is a super interesting sort of moment there. Well, let's pause there for a second.
Yeah.
And come back. But Paul has a dream from a man calling him to come to Macedonia and help us. And so Paul, just like you and I, is living by faith, lots of closed doors, and he has a dream. And the question is, you should ask in the text, will he listen to the dream or not?
Yeah.
Do you listen to your dreams?
I'd probably never had a clear dream like that, of like God telling me something to do, So I don't know if I have or not, but I definitely had moments of sensing the direction of God, maybe not as dramatic as this dream that Paul has.
So in Acts 2, Peter quotes Joel 2, which says that men will have dreams and have visions. Mm. And it's the work of the Holy Spirit that does something like that. Let me go there first.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go strangely into dreams and visions.
Yeah.
I've personally, there has been a few times in my own sort of life with Jesus that I felt like certain dreams were like God speaking to me. Mm. Now, I'll tell you a great story of a really great friend who I met at Bible college. He was from Zimbabwe. His wife had passed away, and he was gave his life to Jesus. And he was told in a dream by Jesus that he needed to go to the United States to become a pastor. Now, can you become one of those in Zimbabwe without traveling the United States? Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. It was a distinct call. The problem is that he did not know how to read or write in English. Mm-hmm. And so for 2 years, every night he would go to sleep and a hand on a chalkboard would teach him how to read and write English. And then after those 2 years, the door opened for him to go to a United States Bible college. And he was incredibly good at reading and writing in English. And he attributed those were God's lessons on how to train. And I don't know what to do with that, except that, like, here's my brother in Christ, who I love, know, trust, and that's how he got to the place where I got in Joplin, Missouri. And so, another thing is, like, that's a whole rabbit trail just opened up, really. But it's a reality of, like, God's work can happen supernaturally.
For sure. Yeah, and I think we live in a context, kind of, or in a church context, in a cultural context where we discount that pretty easily.
Yeah.
And yet if you're around the church long enough, if you're hearing, you'll hear stories.
Yeah.
A lot from other places. I feel like it seems like maybe other parts of the world, God is operating in some dramatic ways like that mm-hmm. maybe we don't see as often here, but you'll hear some dramatic stories from here too, in the United States, from Canada, as well. And so I think it's just a reminder to be more open to the work of the Spirit than you might be inclined to. Cause I think we're often not super inclined to that or willing to kind of be attuned to that and to listen to that.
Yeah, that's right. So another thing, and then from the text of Acts 7, where they're not allowed to enter a region, they end up in Troas. Do you know who they pick up in Troas? The writer of Acts.
Oh yeah.
Luke.
Yeah. Yep.
And so all of a sudden you turn from them and they to we.
Yeah.
So because they were not allowed to go to a certain region, God was shaping their missteps mm-hmm. into meeting Luke himself.
Yeah.
So because of this second missionary journey, we get the Gospel of Luke and we get the Book of Acts. Mm-hmm. Like, how incredible is that?
Yeah.
Like, that is a God size direction leading that Paul and his friends have. And then they go from there, they pick up Luke, and then he has the vision in Troas about the Macedonian men. And they're on their way to a place that you and I will know as Philippi. How cool is that? Luke is, we didn't even talk really about it, but Luke is picked up.
Yeah, he's
in the second missionary journey.
Yeah, it moves from being a historical account that Luke has assembled from talking to eyewitnesses to a firsthand account that he's a part of.
That's right. So they end up in this place called Philippi, and Philippi is super cool. Actually, when we were in Antalya, on the first day, Calvary people, we stopped right before dinner at a statue of Philip II. And the statue is pretty cool because it looks like a between Maui, the Disney character, and Tarzan. And he like stands like 9 feet tall with a trident at the entry port of Antalya. Mm. And it was super cool because you're like, that is Alexander the Great's dad, who,
okay,
even Zach and Perry and I were talking about it this week. Philip II is an incredible man of history. Like, just if you think, but he gets overshadowed by his son, Alexander the Great. Now, Philip II is also an evil man and an ungodly man, but because of Philip II and Alexander the Great and sort of their historical lives, Paul now travels the Roman world and has one common language and one common currency and one common way in which the world is connected from Philip II and Alexander the Great. But anyways, they go up to a place called Philippi, which is named after him. He named it himself. He conquered it. And it's a city in which has a gold mine. And because of his conquering it and naming it, it's basically the gold that funds the warfare for him and Alexander the Great to conquer the world, is Philippi. So it's a prestigious city. And you had a funny joke of what Philippi was from Zach.
Yeah, well, I think all of our preachers talked about just a little bit about how like Philippi was such a, it was a very Roman place. It was almost like a little second Rome. And then Zach said, it's good to have a Rome away from Rome.
That's really good, actually. That's really good. I like that a lot. And it really is. It's a Roman colony. It's prestigious in that most of the major generals that fight for Rome retire in Philippi. It's a great place to retire from. One, it holds the mint for the currency of Rome. So there's a lot of minting that goes on, like money is exchanged. Mm-hmm. You can become wealthy. In fact, it has all the to-dos you would want to have after coming off the battlefield for the rest of your life. Healthcare, entertainment, all the things you would want in retirement. Pickleball courts, bowling alleys. Philippi has it.
And you're probably like, what, like 40 if you're retiring as a Roman?
Yeah. You're actually right on
life expectancy.
Yep.
Pretty good.
Totally. It's a good place to retire. But that's Philippi, and they end up in a town called Philippi, the missionary journey does, and the first European convert takes place there. And she's pretty famous.
Yeah. We encounter Lydia, who's a really... kind of a prominent figure here in the text. And I think in general, just, you know, these people that we're going to meet in Acts 16 and that Paul's probably, they're probably still around as Paul's writing this letter 10 years later.
Yeah.
So at least right. Some of them, it's such an interesting group of people, you know, and I think it's just a group that really reinforces the accessibility of the gospel or the, you know, just the gospel is something for everybody.
Yep.
You know, because we're going to see rich and poor, male and female, privileged and exploited, you know, and, you know, Jew and Gentile, you know, it's talk about there's not maybe a lot of Jews in the city of Philippi, but, you know, the people bringing the gospel are Jewish.
Yeah.
Here as well. And, you know, it's just really barriers are being broken down left, right, and center in this chapter, which is really incredible.
It's really incredible. Yeah, so the first missionary journey, the first convert of a Gentile outside of the region of Jerusalem takes place. And the second missionary journey, it's the first European has a convert. Mm. So that's like, let me put that in context a little bit for us. That's like if we knew there was a unreached people group in the world.
Yeah.
Let's say from our landscape, Indonesia. Okay. And we send two of our trusted friends to Indonesia And then they come back with news that there's actually people who got saved in Indonesia. Like, that would make headlines around our community, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. There would be like probably a missionary night where we hear all the cool stories. Yeah. There'd be preaching that would have illustrations from them for months to come, like unreached people groups sharing the gospel, all those type of things. That's what's happening in these first two missionary journeys with Paul. Is he's coming back to Jerusalem, and the apostles in the early church who knew Jesus Christ, saw him raised from the dead, knew about the importance of going to the nations, are finally hearing reports that like the first European convert has happened. And it's like so significant to them. It's earth shattering that in their context, how could someone from that far away be converted to Jesus?
Yeah.
And that's what we're reading in Acts. You and I read it like, ho-hum, this is this part of our scripture reading, you know, it's Acts.
Yeah, but it's
this is like
momentous.
Yeah. Yeah, momentous in church history. And fantastic for a Christian that you and I can say, wow, because of that moment in Philippi, you and I, a Canadian and a Texan, are converted to Jesus Christ because of the person-to-person sharing of the faith for the last 2,000 years has given us that opportunity.
Yeah. It's a reminder that it's important to, like, pay attention to what's happening in the church around the world too. Cause like these kinds of things are still happening.
Right.
You know, like people are connecting with groups of people that have maybe never heard of the gospel before, or it's been kind of a long time since there's been a significant Christian presence in that area or whatever, you know, so like that kind of stuff is happening, but it also even just happens in our own community.
It does.
You know, like I think of Rob, who directs our men's ministry. Just some cool things happened last year with some Bibles, some men's Bible studies opening up and guys getting connected who either hadn't been to church in a long time or never been to church. And, you know, like that's happening in our community to some, you know, it's maybe they're not the first ever the thing, but like we're seeing people who are not connected to Jesus get connected to Jesus, you know, and that's, it's just, it's a reminder to like, be excited about that and be a part of it too. You know, if you're like, oh, that's, not doing anything. I'm not seeing that happen. It's like, well, there's probably some way that you can plug in. You know, we got opportunities for you, but it's just an exciting thing to be a part of and to hear about. And
Yep. That's right. Be prayerful always in the fact that there's people in the world who are risking their lives at times to go to people that have never heard Jesus' name. And that is a really work that you and I can do on this end is to pray and support them.
Yeah. We, as a church, we have, we support a bunch of people who are doing this and you can pick it up. You know, we have a little booklet.
Yeah. That's a good connection.
At our campuses that talks about all the people that we're supporting that are doing missions and ministry work all around the world. And, you know, learn, if you haven't heard about those, you haven't seen that little booklet, you should learn about those people and what they're doing.
Yeah. Here's the real question. I think that Philippians 1:1 asks is how does Jesus's kingdom grow? Mm-hmm. And you think about it, you're like, well, it's a work of the Spirit. It's the work of God. It's his work. But ultimately, in the practical sense, it grows from person to person, from individual to individual. And we see that in the book of Acts. And Paul, 10 years later, while he is in prison for the gospel, is writing back to the people of Philippi, the Philippians. And that's what we're going to read this fall. Yeah. Is what does Paul say to people that were person to person influenced by Jesus Christ?
Yeah. One of the things I was also thinking about, too, is it also grows from community to community. Yep,
that's right.
You know, it's not... it is not an it is not an individual enterprise. It is transferred from person to person. But one of the, you know, I was thinking about even further back in Acts 16, Acts 13, before Paul's gone, I think it's before he goes on his first journey.
Yeah.
He's come to, you know, God has done this amazing work in his life. He's come to faith in Jesus and he's kind of just hanging out in Antioch in a church community, essentially. Yep. You know, it says they're fasting and they're praying and all these things. And, you know, Paul's just there as a part of this community. And the community senses a leading of the Spirit that they need to send some people out to tell people about Jesus. And they select Paul and Barnabas.
That's right.
To Mark. Do that. And then, so like, they're backed by a community. They're part of a community. They're backed by a community. And, you know, I think that that's, being Christian is not an individual enterprise. Being a missionary or a minister is not an individual enterprise.
Right.
You know, you need to be a part of a community that's going to help form and shape you and equip you to be able to do these things and even help discern like, hey, this is what you should be doing. You should leave your job and go and become a missionary in some faraway place. Or it might be you should stay in your job and help the people who are there to know Jesus. You know, like that community can help discern those things in your life.
That's right. That's a really good, poignant point for us today. I think also with that in that community is that the part of the reason Paul's writing to the Philippians is actually they've been supporting him in his other missionary journeys. So they're financially contributing to him in his other endeavors just beyond his time in Philippi. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That like they become the support of Paul. And it makes sense because Philippi is a rich town. It makes sense that Lydia has a house big enough to host the church. She has the influence and there's individuals within that community that have the means to help support Paul on his other endeavors. And he's writing back to them. And we're going to catch that in the book of Philippians. It's like a mutual thing that we're watching and witnessing as we read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just a few things to keep notice of. I love this. You put this slide up after the preach. It's like what to read next for the book of Philippians. You're going to read Philippians 1, 3 through 11 for this week. There's a couple of things you need to pay attention to while you read the book of Philippians. There's a few words that I think are really helpful to circle every time you see it. The word joy. So in all honesty, the whole theme of the book of Philippians is Paul teaches that joy of the gospel should rule our lives regardless of circumstances. Like that is the book of Philippians. That joy should rule our lives regardless of our circumstances because of what Jesus has done in us. You should pay attention to how often Jesus Christ is mentioned in the text. Mm-hmm. So it is saturated with that. Early on in chapter 1, there's a few words I think are really important. Fruit is a really important word in chapter 1 of the book of Philippians, as well as just sort of this idea of what and how righteousness develops within the Christian and how Paul prays for that righteousness to develop in the Christian life. So those are some things I would pay attention to early on in the book of Philippians.
Yeah. And some have even, you know, I lead the team that helps like put together the design for the series. And, even in the titling of it, we settled on like a Christ focused title, cause that's such a huge thing, but we were talking about joy titles and things like that as well. But instead we're trying to fill it with imagery that just conveys joy because that is such a huge, huge thing. So, you know, that imagery that's going along with this is just very intentional to reflect some of these themes as well. And actually all the photographs that we're using in the little bumper that plays before the thing and the posters on the wall, they're all photos from our church. They're all Calvary Bible Church photos and people. And, you know, so we're just showing the joy that's in our community.
Yeah. What a beautiful motif of who we are by doing something like that. That's really cool. Oh, another word to pay attention to in the book of Philippians is servant or slave. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that was a big thing even just this week. We talked about a lot this week. But
that's right. He didn't declare his apostleship with the people of Philippi. He didn't need to. He declared that he was a slave to the gospel, a doulos, a real true bond servant of Jesus Christ is somehow some Bibles translate that too. And what that means is like Paul is directing his life on the fact that whatever Jesus needs him to do, he says yes to. Mm-hmm. which is so uncategorically different than what I typically live my life like. Whatever Jay wants to do, I usually do. And where Paul has a mindset of whatever Jesus wants to do, he does. How crazy is that?
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things I was thinking about with that word too is just like we have a certain view of the word slave.
Yes.
From American history.
Yes.
And I think we need to remember this is not that.
Yes.
You know, it meant something different in Paul's time. But it is more than like servant seems more like you adapt that posture because you're humble and it's voluntary and things like that. It's a little less voluntary than that. But it's not the horrific thing that happened in American history either.
Yes.
You know, so it's, but it is this idea you have a master and you are compelled to, as you said, you know, do what they tell you or ask what they want, you need you to do and to go and do that kind of a thing. So it's, you know, there is a certain indebtedness, and we are indebted to Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, we're indebted to God for what he's done to save us.
Yeah. I think about the, Dietrich Bonhoeffer quote when I read the book of Philippians, whereas grace is free, but discipleship costs. Mm-hmm. This is one of his most famous quotes. Yeah. And I think that's a reality of what Paul is living in the book of Philippians, is that discipleship is costly, but ultimately it has a lot of joy attached to it.
Yeah.
It has a lot of joy.
It's the best life that you're going to live.
Yep.
So it's like, yes, you are indebted and compelled and it is costly, but you're also never going to find a better way to live.
Yep. That's right. And the invitation is still today to pick that up.
Yeah.
Or lay it down, depending on how you need to live that. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, that was a really good conversation to start us off.
Yeah.
Book of Philippians, here it comes. One of the things also in reading verse 3 through 11 is that, ask this question. How does Paul pray for people? And then
that's a good question.
Philippians 1, 3 through 11 instruct you on how to pray for people. Because it's different than normally how I pray for people.
No, that's a good prompt. That's ripe for reflection.
Good. Good. Well, thanks so much for your time, Calvary. Thanks for listening in. We're so glad and joyous to be back filming the weekly with this new sermon series in the book of Philippians, a Mark It Up series. What a joy it is to serve and live and be among you. May you be blessed this week. Continue to stay faithful. And like always, if you need anything, let us know by visiting calvarybible.com. We would love to connect with you. Have a great week.